Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am on lead vocals today. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. I've got Matt Neely, producer, bringing up the drums in the background over here. We are talking all things restaurant business today on Jump in. First and foremost, on the local restaurant updates on your food for thought, Fire Truck Brewing Company has announced the closure of what was their only one of two remaining locations. So they're closing their Oro Valley location, leaving them with just the location, the OG Fire Truck Brewing at Swan and Grant. Now, you may have remembered that Taylor Carter, the proprietor of Fire Truck, had been on the show before over here on Jump In. Taylor's a great guy, but gosh, did he take a lot of hits on the internet about this restaurant closing? If you look at some of the food pages over there, there seem to be quite a few people celebrating that closure. And I'm really disappointed to hear that because, quite frankly, the stress, the risk-reward relationship that comes in opening up your own businesses like this are so great that the idea that anybody would dance on the grave of any local restaurateur, regardless of their political affiliation or outspokenness, is quite disappointing to me because these people employ so many individuals, and it's so important for us that it really breaks my heart to see that Fire Truck closing. However, they're doing a $4 pint special right now at the OG location over at Grant and Swan. So if you happen to be rolling down Grant Road, go give those guys a visit. Speaking of not reading the comments on the internet forums and sections over here, I myself got into a bit of hot water on ye old Facebook with the egg lawsuit, as aforementioned, on the Wake Up Tucson show with Christy Simone over here. There was a Supreme Court hearing on Friday. This case happens to be about a limitation of gubernatorial powers. Can they in fact appoint somebody such as the head of Department of Agriculture and then use that appointment to create laws? We used eggs and cage-free eggs as a reason to have standing to show damages in this case and have thus sued the governor, the Department of Agriculture, and gotten Attorney General Chris Mays involved. And there was a Supreme Court hearing about that on Friday. We're going to get the results in between 30 to 60 days over here. But in the meantime, I got absolutely beat up on the internet by a whole lot of folks that don't unfortunately understand how the food business works, right? That restaurants are ultimately giant agro businesses buying from very large corporations to get that food that you want on your table for Friday or Saturday night. And so I as well, hopefully like Taylor Carter, not reading that comment section over here, we're gonna keep our heads up high and fight the good fight and help limit gubernatorial powers so that when COVID-20 or COVID-21 comes down, they don't have the ability to do the same thing they did over the last 4 years and shut us down. Now, on the more positive side of things, pumpkin spice season is upon us tomorrow. Starbucks is bringing out their pumpkin spice lattes and pumpkin spice cold foam. I'm no particular huge fan of Starbucks myself. My wife does admittedly go to a Starbucks quite often in the morning on the way to work, and I always chide her and tell her to support local instead. But one of the reasons that she goes to the Starbucks is because of the app and the way it remembers her orders, and they can order for pickup. And that reminds us, as local operators, the kind of changes that we need to do to adapt or die, that if we don't have these sort of technologies, we're going to fall rapidly behind, particularly to these big chains that can afford to open up store after store. There's a new coffee shop that just opened up at 1610 North Tucson Boulevard, Tucson and Elm area, the Sonora Coffee House, Sonoran Coffee House, just opened up in the last week and some change. And so owner Courtney Obedient and partner, I wish them tremendous amount of luck. Hopefully they will be able to adapt and die and compete against the Black Rocks and the Starbuckses and these very large corporate chains that continue to enter the market. As well, we've got Sonoran Restaurant Week coming up, right? It is September 6th through the 15th. September is a great time to do a Sonoran or an Arizona Restaurant Week. Sonoran Restaurant Week is essentially Southern Arizona's spin on Arizona Restaurant Week. And they offer discounted course meals at a whole number of local restaurants. I think there's over 50 or 60 at this point participating. You can find out more at SonoranRestaurantWeek.com. That's brought to you by Visit Tucson and Tucson Foodie. do take advantage of that time to come out and support your local restaurants. We've talked about this before on the show that September is actually the slowest month of the entire calendar year for the service industry. And that shocks an awful lot of people, right? Because you would logically think that June or July, when the temperatures are hitting 114, that that would be the absolute bottom of the valley. But it turns out it's often September. One of the big reasons happens to be something that I think we're all fans of, and that is U of A football. Nearly every Saturday in the month of September, Saturday has a home U of A football game with a tremendously large tailgate. Over 60,000 of the most wealthiest influential Tucsonans go and drink open container alcohol on the lawn of the University of Arizona, having beers 1 through 10 out there. And maybe we do see them at 8, 9, or 10 p.m., but like we're selling you beers number 8, 9, and 10, not profitable beers number 1, 2, and 3. And so it can actually be kind of a setback when you've got a day that could be, say, 40% of your sales, and it's taken up by a giant street party. Not knocking it. I've been part of that street party before. Big shout out to Paige and David and the double-decker bus and the boys out there. U of A football is coming up next Saturday against New Mexico, 7:30 p.m., We're going to host that coach's show for new football coach Brent Brennan every Monday at Union Public House starting at 6 p.m. And for the next 14 Mondays, if you want to get an opportunity to meet the football coach, that would be a great opportunity to do so as well, too. He's a great guy, and we're wishing that team a tremendous amount of success in the upcoming season. Coming up, though, after the break, we're going to talk a little bit about restaurant success as well, too. I've got a former crew member of mine, an OG member of Union Hospitality Group, that has spawned off to open a new restaurant here in Tucson with his wife, Chef Patrick Malarczyk. Coming up after the break, we're going to break down all things about opening up your own restaurant in Tucson. When we come back after that break, don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger on Jump in Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. Thank you so much for spending part of your morning with us. I am host Grant Kruger, and live in studios this morning, we've got Chef Patrick Malarczyk from Tandem American Kitchen. Welcome, Chef.
Hey, thanks for the invite, Grant. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. It's been a while since I got to see your face, Patrick. For those listeners that don't know, Patrick Malarczyk was one of our original chefs over at Union Public House on our opening team when we opened up in 2011.
Yeah, it was a great experience. I'm glad I got the opportunity to work with you, work with the rest of the team, and build something that's still bustling, still great.
One of the things that I get a tremendous amount of pride from are crew members of mine that have gone off to open their own restaurants. It's so cool to see all you guys flourish. And even though on some levels, like on the highest level, you might look at it and say that we're restaurateurs and we're even competitors, I think we're tremendous allies. And I couldn't be prouder to have Chef Malarczyk here in front of me today. Chef, can you break down your start in the culinary industry? Like, how'd you get started in all this madness?
Well, truth be told, I just started busting suds like the best of us back when I was 15 years old, got a job, wanted to buy a computer, fell in love with the business. I kept working all through high school, eventually took off into culinary school in Phoenix, and then came to Tucson, kind of made it my home state or hometown, and worked around at five or six different restaurants before kind of finding my home at Union Public House.
So, like so many other restaurateurs that are successful, like Patrick starts literally in the dish pit. I started in the dish pit as well, too. And there is nothing more you could learn about the restaurant business and being an employee than having the humility of having to scrub cheese off of cast iron plates for 8 hours a day, right? Wearing a plastic garbage bag as a schmuck, having your feet wet and stepping on that quarry tile the whole time to teach you the value of a dollar, huh?
You know, I'll always remember that when I got hired, they told me I would never move my way up because I was just a kid. And it actually took about 2 months when I came in and there was over 10,000 dirty dishes when I came in at 8 a.m. on a Sunday because they didn't clean up from the banquet the previous night. Kept my head down, got everything clean. About 8 hours later, chef called me in the office and said they were going to put a knife in my hand.
Now, who the heck closed last night is generally a statement that we say a lot in the restaurant business, replacing the word heck, of course, with something that we can't say over here on live radio, lest Matt Neely cut us off of the air, get us in trouble over here with the FCC. So So essentially, you came on as part of the opening team of Union. You got to go through some of that madness with me over there. And you met your wife over at Union Public House as well, too. Can we talk about that a bit?
Yeah, so we met on the back dock of the Union Construction Zone. She was coming to apply to be a server bartender. I'd been hired as a sous chef, and she simply asked, "Hey, is this where I'm supposed to be to apply for a job?" So I walked her over to the office, introduced her to Grant, and I believe it was Chris Thompson at the time were doing the interviews, and that's the first time we met. We didn't immediately start a relationship. That's a little bit unprofessional since I was in a management position.
I believe the statutes of limitations have now passed on this one, Patrick.
You know, I'm not sure about that. I'd have to consult my lawyer.
Understood. So we can neither confirm nor deny exactly when their relationship started here, but sometime meeting at Union, which is also so cool. Service industry people often date other service industry people. Because quite frankly, when you work nights and weekends and holidays, if your significant other doesn't work nights, weekends, and holidays, it can be a really terrible combination. It's very tough to be in the service industry and say married to a teacher or something that would have the exact opposite schedule as you.
No, I agree 100%. You have to find somebody that can understand and appreciate that you're going to leave the house at 7 a.m. and not show back up at home till midnight. And you're doing it for a reason and you're doing it for your family. But if they're working a 9-to-5, they might feel neglected or lost or anything like that. So
we worked together until probably mid-2016 or so, till you guys got married, if I recall correctly. And you guys went off to open your own restaurant in Sierra Vista. Tell us about that process, about that risk-reward relationship of starting your own restaurant, going from chef, and Ayana started as a server, but later, of course, was a manager with us as well, too. Like, how did that feel to open up your own place?
I think it was something we always both wanted to do, even long before we met each other. You know, Ayana went to school for restaurant and hospitality management. I went to culinary school. And I think the goal always is the American dream, right? Let's make something that's ours, that belongs to us, that we can grow in our own right. So I received a phone call shortly after leaving Union from a previous employer of mine who was ready to retire, had an established restaurant, had a building, all that kind of good stuff, asking me if I wanted to take over. So we took the dive. We knew there was risk, but we'd done it for other people. So we figured, let's give it a shot. And it went well. It was well received. We ended up having to close that location because simply we grew out of it. The building wasn't big enough for the people that wanted to come in. And we found a larger location, ran that for a couple of years. And then that location sold to an assisted living developer, once again, kind of leaving us homeless. And that's when we returned to Tucson to open our current location on Tinker Verde and Bear Canyon, Tandem American Eatery, and been there about a year right now, and things are just going great.
Yeah, so ultimately, why did you pick that location? Like, give us the breakdown. When you're thinking about a location for a restaurant, like, what sort of factors come to mind?
Well, the biggest one for us is neither one of us have trust funds. Neither one of us have made millions of dollars in previous career paths. You know, I wish maybe I was a real estate developer or an investment banker. However, I worked on a line most of my life, and that doesn't always provide you the opportunity to get tons of savings. But we found a location that was built out. It had the hood system. It had the grease trap. It had the bar built. It had the walk-ins installed. And we knew from the get-go that those are big expenses. Those cost money. Those take time. As long as everything was up to code, which fortunately we had the foresight to call out the health department, call out wastewater, call out pretty much everybody we could get in the building before signing a lease to be like, hey, is this good to go? Or are you going to come tell us in 3 months that your grease trap needs to be 500 gallons bigger and cause us to dig up the parking lot? So
sage advice, probably something forged from the couple restaurant openings that we did together, because not only did we open up Union together, we also opened up Reforma Modern Mexican in St. Phillips Plaza together, a pretty massive tenant improvement, right? We had to take the old Cafe Terracotta and Vivace space that hadn't really been improved on in 30 some odd years and basically tear it to the ground and build everything from scratch back up. An incredibly expensive proposition. I think most listeners out there like wouldn't get just how much money it takes to take a building that isn't food service and turn it into food service. And as Patrick was alluding to, even businesses that were previously food service, as in last month, last week, even yesterday, might not be up to code. Anytime you get a new health permit, a new certificate of occupancy, the city or county goon squad gets the opportunity to come in, knock on your door, pay a little visit, and go through those parts and pieces and see if they're still up to code. I think, Patrick, you remember when we did that grease trap at Union when it was Acacia, before it was a 100-gallon grease trap, and I believe they moved it to 1,500 gallons?
Yeah, so that's where I learned to check those pieces. I actually had worked at Acacia previous to Union Public House, and it was a nice place. It was a good building. It operated for years. In a matter of months, Grant took it over and was told, hey, you have to sink an exorbitant amount of money into this place that was a restaurant just a matter of months ago in order to be up to code.
Incredibly difficult process. And this is why so many restaurant construction projects fall behind. Not only are they underfunded, but they're often inexperienced, and they go into places that perhaps you don't own, like you're leasing, and then you do a tremendously large tenant improvement. Think about the concept of that. Like, if you rented an apartment, would you put in new cabinets and granite countertops and a new stone shower or something? Of course you wouldn't, right? You were just renting, but you do that in the restaurant business. It's required before you open up. And of course, that's not only a tremendous investment, it's very illiquid. What is that grease trap worth on Craigslist? Oh, wait, you can't sell it. You can't take it with you. How about those walk-in boxes, right? Or these new mechanicals? Like, these things, quite frankly, have next to no resale value, which is where restaurants end up getting in trouble with the lenders, because so few lenders are willing to lend, because that $5,000 sandwich table you bought is worth about $2 on Craigslist. So I remember with you, we cobbled together parts and pieces to, from used other restaurants going out of business. Did you do that on Tandem's opening as well too?
Yeah, so we were fortunate that the plaza that we were renting from had actually used that location that we moved into kind of as a dumping ground for some other properties they had. So there was some equipment in there.
Hey.
So I had a Cervix tech come out and be like, is any of this usable? Do I have to buy a new sandwich make table, or can we get this one up and running? So fortunately, we were able to use some of the equipment that was pre-existing, and then we bought some of our own.
An expensive endeavor indeed for those that don't know exactly how much all this stainless steel restaurant equipment costs. Like, what kind of investment do you think more or less you put into opening up your own restaurant? Ballpark.
Dollar amount, couple hundred K. And this was almost ready to go. It still takes time and money. It's even paying the staff to do training and stuff like that, that a lot of people don't consider, that before you have sales coming in, you have to pay people to learn how to do the job.
Without a doubt, there's a huge training budget. You might have to go a week of training, an entire week of full Monty payroll for everybody, maybe even 2 weeks before you open up. And when you look at something like the size of, say, Union Hospitality Group, where we've got a few hundred employees, you know, the biweekly payroll could be $250,000. So it's not exactly a small feat anymore. The days of anybody getting to open up their own restaurant for, say, $50,000 are pretty much bygone, huh?
Maybe we can get back to it one day. Maybe somebody will figure it out. But I found that it's going to take a little bit more investment and time to make things go properly.
Certainly. Well, lots of the smarter operators try to find out locations that are going out of business or have gone out of business, and figure out a way to do what we sort of call the Spirit Halloween store model, where you crawl into the shell of a previous operator, perhaps one that made some financial mistakes, and you get to put a coat of paint on it and open it back up, huh?
That's my model. I don't have the funds to build out myself, so let's find somebody who did. Unfortunately, they didn't do it to the community's standards, and now there's an open building that has the equipment needed.
Well, when we come back after the break, we're going to break down a little bit more about what it takes to open up your own restaurant here in Tucson with Chef Patrick Malarczyk. It's a real treat to have you here in the studio today. It's so neat to think how you both worked in the Acacia building. I worked in that building when it was Daniel's. And here we are together. We opened up our own restaurant over there. And now you've opened up your own restaurant in Tucson. We've got another half an hour coming up with Chef Patrick Malarczyk on Jump in Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and we are live with Chef Patrick Patrick Malarczyk, talking all things opening up your own restaurant in Tucson here on Jump In. I love to celebrate the business successes over here as well, too. Jump In happens to be one of my favorite radio shows because we've got such a diverse, great group of hosts. Yesterday, we had Ted Maxwell from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. Tomorrow, we've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. He's bringing in Chris Dodge from the Tucson Jazz Festival, a real cool festival coming up in just a few months. They're going to talk about where you can see live jazz. As you just heard on the radio, Dr. Ed Ackerley brings us up on Home on Fridays on Jump in Tucson, a faculty leader at the University of Arizona. He's looking for meals for coaches for charity, maybe something Patrick and I can do over there. Welcome back, Patrick. Thanks for sharing some of your story with us over here. Let's talk about tips for people wanting to open up their own restaurant. For someone that just did it in the last year, if our listeners have an inkling that, you know what, I should open up my own restaurant, what do you got to say to them, Chef?
Well, the simplest answer is don't.
Okay, well.
No, I don't want to be negative about it. I mean, I love what I do. I love opening restaurants. This is obviously our third location that we've opened up. But try to be aware of what you're getting yourself into. Depending on which walk you come from, if you're somebody who's always wanted to open a restaurant but chose a different career path, and you really want to open a restaurant now because you have the funds and it's always been your dream, before you sink that investment into a property, go get a job in a restaurant. And actually get two. Get a morning job washing dishes and get a night job bussing tables or bar backing. Because those 14-hour days working two jobs, that's what you're going to be doing. At least some of the time. Because you'll have staff members call out. You'll have gripes. You won't be able to find a position. Or just as an owner, I believe there's a degree of expectation from your staff that you're there with them. You're in the trenches. You're working alongside them. You also don't want to be hamstrung by something of, yes, I know how to make really good drinks, but I can't cook a cheeseburger. Learn how to cook a cheeseburger if you're going to have that on your menu. At least have an idea. You may not be as good as your chef that you hire, but if something happens to him, say, lo and behold, he gets sick, his family has an emergency, can you step in and help the team? Can you be a member? And on the other side, if you're somebody that's always been in the restaurant business like myself, you know, I've been doing this since I was 15 years old professionally, there are parts of the business you're not going to consider if you've just been working in a kitchen. There's, like we talked about, the construction aspect of it. There's the legality measures. There's the signing a lease. There's advertising. There's the technological aspect of finding the proper POS system, getting online ordering set up. That may not be your forte, but that is something that has to happen in order for your restaurant to succeed. So think outside of your own personal strengths and at least get an idea of every aspect. Contact a local business owner, somebody that's been doing it. They'll probably talk to you. They'll probably give you some advice. Because believe it or not, me and Grant, while we used to work together and while we now have competing restaurants, we're not enemies. We're not working against each other. We're in it for the same goal, and that's simply to feed people.
Without a doubt, it's a hard enough business to do when everything's going right. But even one technological disaster, one piece of broken equipment can send the whole system spiraling to a crashing halt. The restaurant industry in general is kind of a neat business in the sense that it's literally all facets of the business cycle. You're a production facility, right? With first in and first out going on, you're producing product, hopefully from scratch, actually cooking, but then you're also selling it, and then you're washing everything, and then you're dealing with the advertising and marketing and the employment laws. It's every aspect of the business, the circle of business, all put together in one. And so you've really got to be a jack of all trades, master of none, huh?
I mean, that's what I've learned through my years. Fortunately, I've worked with some owners and with some chefs through the years who've taught me tips and tricks along the way. One of the best ones is if you ever have to call a service tech, somebody to say work on your walk-in or work on one of your coolers, ask them questions, find out what they're doing, because there's a chance what they're doing can be done in 15 minutes by just about anybody. You just have to know what buttons to push. You just have to know what to look for. But they're going to charge you $200 to show up either way. And that $200, that might be your profits for the day. So if you can fix something by turning it off for 25 minutes and letting the compressor catch back up, Learn how to do that.
No, restaurateurs that not only have the gift of gab to be able to talk their way out of problems, but can also turn a wrench are few and far between. And these are qualities that really can pay dividends for you out there as well, too. If you can fix that walk-in door or, you know, fix that leaky sandwich table or replace a capacitor on an air conditioner or something, goodness gracious, could you save a lot of money there?
No, absolutely. And there's so much more to that. I mean, you have to be a therapist at times. As much as equipment breaks down, so do people. And it may be one of your guests, it may be one of your staff members, it may be you personally, because sometimes after those long days, you just kind of feel like you're burnt.
We may or may not have had to cry in the walk-in box together on more than one occasion over here. I can neither confirm nor deny the accuracy of that statement, but it can be tough, right? We're working with people, like, and that people are not robots. Like, our team are human beings who can have difficulty, of course, dealing with the stresses and pressure of the job. And even just with the general public at times can be difficult as well, too.
Yeah, I mean, I love my staff. I love our guests. But yeah, there are times that people will come to work and you can tell something's wrong. You can see it in their eyes. And maybe it's so far removed from their job, and it's something at home, it's something on the other side of the country with a family member or a friend from high school. And just catching that and being there for them and maybe telling them, hey, why don't you take the rest of the day off, can mean everything to them. I mean, there was a time at Union where I had to take a week off and I needed it. And Grant and Steve at the time were just, yeah, you need it, go take it. And it's great to have an ownership that's willing to understand what you're going through. And then on the opposite end, you also have to have thick skin, because as much as what you're doing and you love what you're doing, you spend time and money and effort and it's hours upon hours, you're going to have a complaint. And somebody's going to go on the internet and tell you that you're a horrible person and you deserve nothing and that you should probably crawl inside of a hole. And you just have to accept that. I mean, that's just the way life is these days.
Well, certainly the internet has brought the ability for guests to leave reviews and comments like to the forefront, right? A review used to be a thing where we had to look out for who the food writer was for the Tucson Weekly. If you remember, we'd look out for Adam Borman or Mark Whitaker or some of these guys, and we knew what they looked like, and, you know, Kathy Birch, and, you know, we could, you know, see those review writers coming. But now anybody with a cell phone and an app are essentially an armchair expert as well, too. And that can lead to some conflictive situations.
You know, what I always like to think of with it is I wish people would just come out to enjoy themselves. You don't have to nitpick. Enjoy yourselves. If you don't enjoy yourselves, talk to the owner, talk to the manager. Chances are they're going to want to make it right. They're going to want to make you leave happy, because at the end of the day, food service, that's what we're there for. We're there for immediate satisfaction. We want you to come in, whether you're in a good mood or a bad mood, leave in a better mood. As far as the online critics are concerned, it is what it is. I mean, I always think back to an old Simpsons episode, because we used to talk Simpsons every now and then, where Homer becomes a food critic and he just gives rave great reviews on everything. And everybody in the town is fat and happy, enjoying life, enjoying the restaurants, until the other food critics in town or the other critics in town are like, you're not doing it right. You're supposed to speak poorly of them. And it changes the whole dynamic of the episode. And I wish just more people would try to keep with the positive, because we are local. You know, our families are here. We're paying taxes in the city. We're trying to do something. And if it's not up to your standards, please let us know, because we will try to adjust and we will try to make it right, rather than going home and telling the world that, you know, we deserve to close down.
Without a doubt. And I think it's something that I could, you know, expound upon as well too here, Patrick, that ultimately we're all in the service business. We want to serve you and make you happy. We want to have a win. We want to hear the feedback, both positive and negative, but particularly in person. We're generally an in-person service business, right? Like, we're there to take care of you at that moment. I can't fix your soup if it's too salty after you had it 2 days ago. Like, there's this problem just can't be repaired. So if you do have a bad experience with a local restaurant, go out there, ask for a manager, ask for the owner. We're probably there working in some capacity. And while certainly we have pride and egos and we want our product to be great, it isn't great every single day, every single meal when you're serving 1,000 meals a day, and we'd love to hear it and make it right for you rather than just having criticism on the internet. So When we come back after the break, Patrick and I are going to break down his latest venture, Tandem American Kitchen on Tanga Verde. We're going to talk about the menu. We're going to talk about scratch production and that balance between making beautiful, fresh food and labor costs and how we can make that fit inside the box financially. He's going to tell us some of the delicious treats that him and his wife, Ayana, are making up for us. And hopefully you guys will get a chance to get out there this week to Tandem as well, too, because it's going to be a busy week in the restaurant business coming up. One more segment with Chef Patrick Malarczyk from Tandem American Kitchen coming up after the break. Welcome back to Jump In Tucson. Thank you again for spending part of your morning with us. You get to spend nearly every Wednesday from 9 to 10 a.m. with me, your host, Grant Kruger. We're talking all things local food today. Next week, I've got another local operator, the owner of Penelope Pizza, Jared Swartz, who also happened to work for me as well, too, at Reforma many years ago. And so we're going to talk local restaurants next week on Jump In Tucson, but we've got one more segment with Chef Patrick Malarczyk here live in studio from Tandem American Kitchen. Welcome back, Chef.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, so let's talk about Tandem a bit. Give me a rundown on the menu. What kind of production are you guys doing over there? What kind of food is this?
So we're just trying to do honest, good, from scratch American dining. I actually like to make the joke that everything on my menu with convoluted logic could be considered a sandwich. You know, there's pastas on the menu, but they're stuffed pastas like raviolis and tortellinis. So it's kind of like meat inside of bread. Open face sandwiches, which is our tandem toast, kind of a play on bruschetta. It's like an open face sandwich. So we're just trying to do honest American cooking. Trying to stay away from doing anything that's too high end, because honestly, in this economic age, I don't want a $50 price point. I don't want a $100 plate of food.
No, it makes sense. And it gets very difficult, of course, because there's this balance between scratch production and making beautiful food, but then also having an incredibly high labor cost as well, too. And so you see so many restaurants try to play that balance by buying prefab stuff from Shamrock Foods or Sysco and shaking frozen chicken nuggets out of a bag into the deep fryer. But you don't do that over there at Tandem, huh?
We try to avoid buying any kind of prefabricated product we can. I mean, right down to the fact that every morning when I show up, I fry my own potato chips and I blanch my own French fries so that I have fresh potatoes cooking every single day for our fried items. We patty our own burgers, which actually come from a local farm, Vera Earl, not more than 50 miles from the restaurant door. Braise our own short ribs, make our own bacon. All of our desserts are fab from scratch. Make our own sauces from scratch. Really, what gets me the most about scratch cooking is I know everything in the food. There's not a lot of long-winded, scientific-sounding names that I have to check for when somebody comes in and says, I'm allergic to this. Can I have it? And I'm like, I got to go check 15 boxes. No, I know what's in the food because I put it there myself, or my staff put it there. And as long as they did everything according to recipe, we're safe 100% of the time when somebody comes in with a dietary restriction or an allergy.
And that's amazing. And these days, everybody expects their server to be a certified dietitian with malpractice insurance as well, too. So it certainly is something that, you know, is a difficult challenge for so many restaurateurs to battle with, particularly if they're not making their own food from scratch, like how you are.
Well, one thing I will say, just on the guest respect, please, if you go out to any restaurant, not mine, not Grant's, any restaurant, if you have a dietary restriction, if you have an allergy particularly, let us know. Because there have been plenty of times where somebody orders something and I find out after the fact they have an allergy. We do our best not to cross-contaminate, but I'll give you an example. Somebody was allergic to mushrooms. Now, they got a barbecue bacon burger, which has no mushrooms in it. However, my mushrooms sit immediately behind my barbecue sauce. In my steam table, a drop of mushroom juice could fall in there on a time-to-time basis. I keep more of it in the walk-in. That's 100% safe. And I'll go into the walk-in if I find out somebody has an allergy. In fact, with an allergy, I'm working out of the box because it's a lot safer and cleaner than the food that maybe the same gloved hands touched the lettuce and the tomato, and this person has a tomato allergy. So we go to the different box of lettuce. But we have to know that. Yeah, we need the information from the guests.
Yeah, great advice from Chef Patrick Malarczyk over here. Do let us know. And please, like, let us know if there's the difference between an allergy and just a dietary preference as well, too. Because you can hear the urgency in Patrick's voice that when you say allergy, restaurants like his and Ayana's are taking this seriously, right? Like, they're looking to separate cutting boards and ingredients and do all these sort of things to keep you safe. It's a lot of time and effort to do so. So if you just hate onions, please don't say, I'm allergic. allergic to onions, because there's a big, tremendous difference between not wanting raw red onion on your plate and then me eliminating everything in the dish that might have an onion in a sauce or something or a stock.
No, absolutely. I mean, you have to remember, we're there to give you the experience you want. We're there to make the food that tastes good to you. So if you don't like something, we'll avoid putting it in your dish. And we'll ask the questions. You're allergic to onions, as you said. Okay, our barbecue sauce starts with onions being cooked down in bacon fat with some tomatoes. It's cooked. It's cooked for a while. Then it's pureed, and then it's cooked some more, and then it's strained. Is that going to be okay with it? Oh, that's fine. I'm not that allergic. It's like, okay, I get it. When you cut onions, your eyes water up. Your nasal cavities get rough. It's bad. But if you can have a little bit, let us know. I mean, otherwise we'll ask the question to make sure that you are safe. And sometimes people are like, no, I shouldn't try that. I'll take ketchup instead. Great. Perfect. I don't want to kill you. I'm here to make your life better, not put you in the hospital.
Now, one of the things I've always appreciated you about you as a chef is your commitment to scratch, right? To the level of which you produce all of your own food in-house. It's a really beautiful thing to cook for others that way. And it's something I'm seeing less and less of these days, because you literally can buy an entire prefab restaurant from these broadline purveyors. Like, where do you think the future of the industry is going when we look at both rising food costs and rising labor costs simultaneously?
Well, I mean, the labor cost is rough. The food cost is rough, but it's on everybody. You go to the grocery store, things are more expensive. I mean, guests need to understand that food at a restaurant is going to be more expensive, because you're not just paying for the food. You're paying for the AC being on. You're paying for that server. You're paying for that bartender. And unfortunately, we are a for-profit business, so I like to take a couple of pennies home with me at the end of the day. Now, as far as doing scratch food, it is difficult. In multiple facets. One, people are expensive, and people are even more expensive when they don't do the job right. I kind of have an ace up my sleeve right now, because I'm young enough that I do a lot of it myself. I show up first, I get all that deep prep going, I have a great team behind me, they come in a little bit later. But at the end of the day, if I didn't do from scratch, I could be serving the same exact French fry as the restaurant down the street. So what differentiates me? And I want every restaurant to be a little bit different. When I go out to eat, I'm not going to my own restaurant. I'm going to go to another local restaurant that does their own unique food, because I want to try it. I want to get out there and experience new flavors and new combinations that I'm not doing. And then with a scratch too, it gives you pride. Any cook that's been working in the business, do they really want to open a frozen bag of French fries? Do they feel better about taking that handful of, this was a potato? This was a whole potato this morning, and now I got to fry it into a crispy, delicious French fry and put my own salt on it. I feel like, as somebody who's been in the business for 26, 27 years now, you feel better about that. You feel better about serving it, and you're happier with your job, and hopefully, therefore, happier with your life and your employment.
Without a doubt, I say that every guest that walks in our door is our boss. And do you want to serve your boss well liquor or frozen chicken nuggets out of a Cisco bag? And I don't either. And I don't think you do. And I think that's one of the reasons that Tandem American Kitchen has been and should continue to be a success. We've only got a couple minutes here left in the segment. Why don't you break down for our listeners where you're at? Give us the website, Facebook. Like, where can we find Tandem?
So Tandem is located on the east side, Tanque Verde and Bear Canyon. It's actually a great place to stop. And if you don't live on that side of town, maybe head up to Mount Lemmon to beat the heat, or going up to visit the snow. We actually offer really cool to-go items as well. We do like a picnic lunch where you can take some of our food cold to go if you're going up to the mountain. Our website is tandemaz.com. You can actually order from our website if you want to pick something up to go. We do deliver with DoorDash within, you know, a 10-mile radius or something along those sorts. And we're there, let's see, open up at 11 a.m., close at 9 p.m. It's fine if you walk in the door 5 minutes before we close, because we're still there. We're still cooking Monday through Saturday. We do take Sundays off because I got kids and I want to be home with the family. Got to take that one day a week. But other than that, let us know what we can do. We have a big, we actually have a two-section dining room. One has lots of TVs, kind of a bar side. The other side's great for larger parties, so we can accommodate just about everybody's needs.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Chef Malarczyk from Tandem American Kitchen. It's been a real pleasure having you here today on Jump In Tucson, breaking down all things about opening up local restaurants, tips of the trade, scratch production. It's been a fantastic conversation. I'm so proud of you guys to have you sitting across the studio from me 15 years, almost to the day from when we opened up Union Public House. I appreciate you and Ayana so much and wish you a tremendous amount of success in the future at Tandem American Kitchen. Thank you, listeners, for listening to Jump In Tucson. Don't go anywhere. Dennis Prager coming up next after the break. You've been listening to 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk.